Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and poisoning cases from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 49!
Episode 49, take 56!
Yay! We should start off by apologising that this episode is a little late. We are sorry. We're never normally late. We were bang on time every week, but the gods decided to act against us.
Sinead's computer exploded.
Yeah, there was a power cut and then the computer fell down. And someone actually messaged us on Instagram going, did you mention the Fae?
Yes.
And we never would have because they're wonderful, lovely, lovely people. We did mention snow beasts, actually, when we were first recording this. And maybe we angered them. Maybe that was a thing we didn't know.
Maybe so. I'd forgotten about that. But yeah.
There's a Yeti somewhere that is fucking furious with us. But we are here. Don't worry. It's episode 49. We're with you. How are you, Nick?
I'm all right. I'm confused. It's a day later and I don't know where I am or what I'm doing.
People have messaged us going, oh, is it Friday? I don't know what day it is.
I don't know.
Luckily we're in lockdown. No one knows what day it is at all. But this is the rare occasion where you actually get to record on a Friday. Woohoo! Fri-yay! I'll stop now.
Don't do that ever again.
Sorry.
That was quite upsetting.
I overstepped my mark. Well, any poisonings this week?
No, but I haven't left the house.
No.
So I don't know. Not that I've heard of.
How are the neighbours next door?
Well, they have been quieter, actually.
So, is that because of you paying them a little visit?
So potential poisoning going on there. But no, they could have just left. I don't know.
You don't care.
I don't care.
Neither know nor care. It doesn't matter to you.
Indeed.
It's all fine.
All the same to me.
You know what? It's Friday. We can raise a glass. People are listening to this on Saturday morning, maybe hungover to shit. Like we will, probably.
Like you will, dear. You will.
Well, I have to edit this afterwards. You get to just... This is my episode. You get to sit and drink on a Friday and listen to stories. That sounds amazing. I have to say, vaguely compass mentis, to try and get this out to the good people who follow us.
Vaguely.
Well, speaking of poisoning neighbours and waiting in bated breath, I think it's time for us to thank our Patreon subscribers.
How no? Just that's what's going. How did that work? No,
it worked, but it worked, Nick. You didn't know how it worked, but it worked.
Did it?
Magic.
Right.
Magic. I've thrown glitter. It's magic.
That must be what it is. Yes, we do. They are entirely marvellous. So this week we have to thank the very special Alison Vaughan.
Alison Vaughan, our Patreon subscriber of the week.
Subscriber
of the week. You're the one. You just get special treatment.
You are the one.
The one. The one. Oh, she has the one ring. Oh, precious. I don't know, Alison. You might have one ring. You might be evil. We don't know. But you might be very nice.
Who knows?
But we love you.
We're not going to judge either way.
We don't judge. We know you're very sexy because you're a Patreon subscriber and all Patreon subscribers are innately sexy. And also, yeah, alive and covered in flesh, hopefully.
It's going to weird places. I have to say, it's going to weird places. Not entirely comfortable.
It's Friday. There are no holds barred.
Okay. I think, can we hold a few things?
Okay. Walked right into that one, didn't you, Nick? Well, Nick, I dare to ask, but are you ready to drink cocktails and talk about poison? Well, because goddammit, I am.
Yeah, so it would seem. I think to say otherwise would to invite a horrendous wrath.
Yes, or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails, which is what will happen if this recording fucks up again.
No, I've got stuff to be done. I'm supposed to be doing this this weekend, so.
Have you?
No poison to be done.
Wait a minute. What are you doing this weekend while the rest of us stare into the void?
You stare into the void. I've got stuff to be done. It's not exciting stuff, but it's still stuff that he's doing.
Or you're going to go downstairs?
I might go
downstairs. Come back upstairs.
You don't know the excitement that is my stairs.
I don't. I don't know what you do over weekend. Sometimes you don't text me for a while and you were like, I was out for a walk.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
With my other friends.
You don't have other friends. You have carers. Friends who care. That's all I meant.
Right, yeah.
Fine, go out with your other friends then. Fine. Do they tell you stories and get you drunk?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
But I don't record it on a podcast form.
We don't force other people to listen to our friendship. Well, you know what? It's my story this week. Hooray, hooray, hooray. But as we've established, we can't possibly tell a story without a cocktail in hand.
No.
As you know, dear listeners, every week we pick a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell that will flavour our cocktail of the week. My story, so my pick. And this week's secret ingredient is lemon.
Lemon.
Now, how have we not done Lemon?
Well, I was thinking this when you told me that I don't know how we've not actually covered Lemon. Because it's in many a drink, but we've not had it as a secret ingredient as of yet.
Yes.
Probably that is story related, I'm sure.
No lemon-infused stories. Well, there is lemon in this story, thankfully. Otherwise, this would just be lies. And my life is built on lies, as you know.
This is true.
Yes. But yeah, we've done so many cocktails with lemon in it. And lemon seems to be probably the most popular ingredient we've ever used, aside from gin.
But yeah, I mean, especially in gin cocktails, it's incredibly well used.
Indeed. Well, with lemon as the absolute curveball ingredient, what on earth did you come up with, Nick?
Well, so the temptation was to go with something ginny-based.
Ginny-based.
Because that does go very well with the citrus. But we have done a lot of those sort of classic cocktails with gin and lemon. So we've done the White Lady and we've done the Aviation.
Okay.
So we've gone for something a bit different. So we have gone for a intriguing cocktail that I've never had before called a Gold Rush.
A Gold Rush. Oh, I like it. It's good. Oh, it's the Charlie Chaplin film and the time when people went hunting for gold.
Yes, both in of those things.
America. Yes, that's all I know about the Gold Rush. That and the Donner Party. I think they were hunting for gold and then terrible things happened to them. That's a good story, but it's not poison related.
I think they were hunting for cocktails.
Oh, if they'd been hunting for cocktails, they would have been fine. They wouldn't have all frozen to death and resorted to cannibalism.
plenty of ice. It would have been good.
Oh, that's cocktails. True. And they brought lemons with them. They're precious lemons. Well, yes. Okay. Well, that's how the Gold Rush worked out, apparently. An alternate history. But a Gold Rush. Love the sound of that. And it's not... Oh, you're saying it's not gin-based. Okay. Well, I'm intrigued. So Nick has ever, since we're in lockdown, delivered me a selection of secret ingredients. So it's time for us to go into our isolation kitchens and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
I'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Gold Rush. Now, Nick, it is rather... golden looking.
Well, this is encouraging. Yes, it is.
It is.
Yes. And it's not the usual brown.
No, the browns have stood us well, even though they look horrible.
Done us well, but we've gone away from the brown.
To a more of a goldeny, strawy, wee-coloured drink. Oh, God.
Yes.
Now I've said it, it looks like wee.
Yes. Welcome to your secret ingredient.
Have you just pissed in a bottle and delivered it to me? You were so annoyed about all of the shenanigans that went on with this week's recording. You were like,
mine's okay. Mine's going to be great.
I've never thought of that, actually, that each week you could just deliver me any old shit in a bottle and I wouldn't know. And I'd go, oh, it's lovely.
You're giving me ideas now.
Well, before we give you any more ideas. So the Gold Rush, I'm not allowed to ask you what's in it anymore,
no,
am I? I have to taste it first. All right, so Gold Rush, goldeny goodness, on the rocks. So let's dive in. Cheers.
Cheers.
Ah, whoa. Ooh, that's tasty.
Very nice. That's very nice.
Oh, that's damn tasty. Oh, God, that's nice. Oh, that is literally everything I wanted right now. It's Friday. I've finished work. This is heaven in a glass. Oh, you talk through it while I spend some time with this drink. Yes, I'm gonna be alone with the drink for a bit. You talk. What's in it? Tell me every little detail. Admit nothing, no matter how filthy.
Not entirely sure what you're thinking, isn't it?
I don't know.
But well, as you might have guessed, it does have a lemon in it.
Fuck off.
I know, crazy. I mean, there was the temptation to do a curveball and go, well, lemon, but not actually put lemon in it, but do yellow things.
Like a pint of chartreuse.
Oh, that would have been an option. I perhaps wouldn't have given you a pint because that would have just been a waste. but we didn't do any of that. We've actually gone with lemon. But we have a bourbon-based beverage.
Bourbon?
Not going for the gin. So we have bourbon, lemon, and a honey syrup.
Oh, that's the sweetness. That's the good sweetness.
So, yeah, it's a bit different. Just a normal, plain, simple syrup, just made with sugar. It does have a very, very, very different flavour.
It's got a nice mouthfeel as well. It's got a velvetiness.
Just those three ingredients shaken together, served over a big chunk of ice.
Is that it?
That's it.
Oh my God, that's so easy.
Simplicity itself. Incredibly easy for everyone at home to make this one. You've got a bottle of bourbon in the background. You can make this, not a bother at all.
I like the idea that the bourbon is just stalking them in the background.
Yeah, absolutely.
Watching
it's always in the background of every picture, there's a bottle of bourbon following them around. Up a tree.
And it never moves when they turn around, but it's
absolutely
there. So take your haunted bourbon, add a lemon to it to quell it.
Add a bit of lemon and a bit of honey, and you have a marvellous gold rush.
That is delicious. I'm surprised how delicious that is. Now, I think I was saying to you the other day that I'm much more into bourbon than I ever thought I would be, and it's because of this podcast. I never drank bourbon before this podcast, before we started having cocktails together. And even when we used to go out for cocktails, I'd naturally choose something gin or tequila based, a white spirit, if you will. But bourbon, I always associated it with Jack Daniels, which isn't even a bourbon, is it? It's not even a good one. But now I've gotten bourbon. Oh, I'm into my bourbon drinks. And that is glorious. It's a little sweet, but with the, it just works. Everything perfect. About this works.
It's a perfect drink.
You're a genius, Nick, for inventing it.
I'm marvellous. I did not invent it. I wish I could. Wish I could take credit for that one.
No one's going to know.
I'll know.
That's where your moral compass sits.
Yes, pretty much.
Well, it's that,
stealing
that's
someone
know.
Else's cocktails. No.
Hurling abuse at your co-presenter. Yes.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine.
Absolutely fine. Oh, well, I'll forgive you that because you've made me a delicious, delicious drink.
Well, how kind.
Oh, that's going to go down really quickly. I feel a bunch of these coming on this evening. Apologies in advance if the editing in this is shot to shit. But it's been a hell of a week, guys. But Gold Rush, a roaring success. And with our Gold Rushes firmly in hand, no one's taking it from us. Are you ready for a story, Nick?
Oh, I think so.
It's Friday. We've got a cocktail.
It's Friday.
Time for a story.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Well, I thought we could...
Did you? What did you think?
I thought we could go back to the 1800s in France.
Oh.
Ooh, it's a country.
Is it?
Yes.
Thanks for that.
I'm laying out all the detail for you.
So, yeah. Okay, we're in the 1800s. We're in France. Okay, so that's a huge amount of detail.
Put
on
a piece of toast. I set the toaster to 3, medium brown. No. We are going to tell the story of three friends. Brothers, Auguste and Hippolyte Ballet. Very nice. Very French. Very French name.
Very French.
And their friend Edme Samuel Castaing. Three men. Three friends in France. I don't know why I put so much drama on that bit.
Okay, well, I mean, we're really setting the scene. We've got three people in France. Wow. Okay.
Oh, but where will the story go? Ooh.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, the possibilities are still endless.
It's not one, but three people. That's math you can't even do. Auguste and Hippolyte Ballet, the Ballet brothers, let's call them, were the sons of a wealthy lawyer, very well-to-do. Auguste was the elder brother. And he is a very strapping lad. He's very healthy into his teens, but he's very lazy, a little bit feckless. Pretty much due to the fact that his mother had reportedly taken an instant dislike to him after he was born. Yeah, apparently 5 days after he was born, a nurse dropped him in front of the mother, and the mother found this so distressing that she became ill and blamed the son for the rest of his life.
This mother is a fool.
She's not a very nice woman. No.
This is...
Blame the nurse. That's the one.
Exactly, yeah. Blame the nurse. She's the one who's throwing your children around. Surely she bears some responsibility for shock and terror.
Maybe she was in a relationship with a nurse and she didn't want to find fault with the nurse. And go, no, please, it was my stupid son's fault for being a baby. Apparently he had to eat in the kitchen with the servants.
My God.
Yeah, whereas his younger brother, Hippolyte, and his sister were allowed to eat with the family. And he was packed off to boarding school when he was 5. So, you know, he was a bit bitter. Hippolyte, by comparison, was doted on by his mother and afforded all the luxuries that most kids would have. And he was very studious and intelligent, worked very, very hard, unlike his brother. But he was a little bit sickly. He suffered from consumption, which apparently he had inherited from his mother. So his mother's just a bitch all round.
Do you inherit... consumption?
You can leave it in your will.
Is it like a gift? When I die, you will get the TB that I so cherished.
Your grandmother had it, and she had it before her. It's a family tradition. Here's my consumption. That's a bad will reading, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I leave my house. To you, I leave syphilis. So the brothers, they befriended in their youth Edme Castaing. I think I'm saying that right, Edme. It's E-D-M-E, French name Edme. As long as I don't call him Esme, then it's fine.
Yes.
That was his alter ego, as a showgirl.
At a weekend.
Oh, he loved to dance. Edme was the youngest of three sons, and he's born into a respectable, comfortable family, not overly wealthy. But he is very, very bright and very studious young man, and he decides he's going to take a career in medicine. So he studies at the School of Medicine in Paris. By all accounts, he's a remarkable student, works very hard, wins many awards. He's not poor, but he's definitely going to have to work for a living. Whereas the Ballet Brothers, you know, money's going to come to them via mummy and daddy when they pop off.
No inherited TB for him.
No. He didn't get any TB at all. He only got a mild cough, which was more distressing, I feel. But a doctor can command a respectable income and a good reputation. So he's fine. But poor Edme, around the age of 22, 23, while still working to qualify as a doctor, he found himself very distracted by the shapely form of a widow. Oh, those widows.
Those widows.
Yeah. Widows are always up to no good in these stories.
Absolutely, yeah, indeed. Just prowling the round.
Dressed in sexy black.
Absolutely, all under a shawl. Yeah, very mysterious.
And they're all buxom as well. They're all cinched at the right places.
Pouncing on unsuspecting youths.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, you're widowed and you're horny. And young medical student, he's going to know his way around, maybe.
Or if he doesn't, he will do after he's met the widow.
Oh, God, that's a point.
Let me show you. Have you reached this far in your training?
Oh, God, figuratively and literally. Indeed. He could not mend a broken leg, but he knew everything about the vagina. It was amazing. It wasn't a gynecologist, strangely enough. No, she is the widow of a judge. She has three children already, and she's been around the block.
Well, at least three times.
At least she's had sex three times. The scandal.
God, she knows what she's doing.
But they start a passionate affair, and this liaison continues. They would go on to, well, they had two illegitimate children together. So they I think she's had sex a full five times now.
My God.
Romance is one thing, if you can call it that. But this is before he's even a fully qualified doctor. He is now financially on the back foot because he's got a widow to support who was married to a judge. And by all accounts, she's
quite... not even a rich widow.
Well, I don't think she is. Whether she is or not, she's not providing for him. She's quite demanding in her societal needs.
Need more black hats.
that black fabric is just being used up every day. She just has one on, like, what is it, like the big rolls of fabric in a house, and she just sort of like spins herself around each day and then goes into the streets.
Can't wear the same black today as I wore yesterday. I need new black.
That don't come cheap. She's got three kids, and he's now got two kids with her over the, you know, a short space of time. So the allowance from his own family is pretty little, and to provide for this new family that he's been saddled with at the age of, what, 25 probably now, five kids and a widow, yeah, the debts are going to start to creep in.
He did not think that one through.
To make matters worse, a couple of years earlier, he had voluntarily acted as a guarantor for a friend's bill for 600 francs.
Fool.
Now, it was due to be paid 2 years later. So he had every faith in his friend or in his abilities as a doctor to be able to, you know, cover this debt. He was showing off. His friend defaulted.
Yeah.
So Edme is stuck with this debt and family. Just not what
Which
you
is
want.
Another kind of debt, really, isn't it?
That's another kind of hell. He does qualify as a doctor. One good thing happens. But his life is not started off that well when he's set up his own practice as a doctor. With this heavy debt on his shoulders, it can't have been much more comfort to him to find that his friends, the Ballet Brothers, had taken up ballet. No, they hadn't. They really hadn't. I would just love it if they did. If they were really bad ballet dancers, that would be brilliant.
We were just forced into it because of the name. You have to dance.
Their family didn't understand how ballet worked, clearly. You will dance in ballet. You will keep up the name. You do realise that's not where it came from. Jed, get in there, you! Put on these tights.
Leap higher.
We can't get any black tights. Some woman has taken them all. the Ballet Brothers receive a very, very healthy inheritance following the death of their parents. Father and mother die within a short space of each other. 260,000 francs each.
Each, that'll
each
do, yeah.
To the children, to the three children. Oh, tasty, tasty, tasty. Mm. And the men are now living in high society. They don't have to work. They don't have to worry about anything. But they still hung out with Edme. Because
kind.
Even though he's below their station, yes, it's fine. They'll still be friends. Or maybe they're still friends because greater concern to all of them was the health of poor Hippolyte, the younger of the brothers, the one who inherited...
The consumption, yep.
Yes, the inheritance is now due and he has full-blown consumption. And his health is gradually worsening. There are fears that while he'll probably have a good few years in him, but not that many. If he dies... his inheritance would naturally pass to his elder brother as the man of the family, and a small amount would then pass to his sister. And Hippolyte, as we've said, is very studious and he's very careful with money. He's very, you know, he's a bit more noble than his brother, who's out living the high life. And he's troubled by his brother's reckless spending, and he's worried that the money is going to be squandered. So it's around this time, as his health is worsening and he's thinking about his future and thinking about his lovely, lovely money... that he quietly starts making inquiries with a notary to change his will to ensure that his sister would actually become the beneficiary of the bulk of his inheritance, and that Auguste would only receive a very small annuity, I suppose it would be, mm-hmm. every single year, so he would only get a very small handout, no lump sum for him.
Well, that makes sense if he is quite so useless with cash.
Exactly. Just give him a small amount every now and then to buy a kipper a week. A kipper in France? What am I talking about?
I have no idea where you got that from.
For baguettes.
Yes, baguettes. Absolutely.
Yes, baguettes and onions. There
and
we
garlic,
are.
Garlic, yeah, absolutely. And brie.
And absolutely. And oh, that sounds great.
Yeah,
no,
I'll be happy with that, to be honest.
Yeah, no money. Just give me a weekly supply of bread and brie and garlic and some wine. And then just give me the grapes. I'll make it myself. I'm so sorry to any French listeners or anyone who's vaguely French. You know, it's going to get worse.
I'm still waiting for some insulting accents to come out.
I will save that for when we do quote bits.
Oh, excellent. I'm looking forward to that.
I'm not going to read the story in a French accent. Ooh. So, yes, he's made these inquiries to a notary about making sure that Auguste would not get this big lump sum. He tells Edme as well. He says, you know, what he's going to do. Edme supports him completely. They are very close friends, actually. They're much closer than Auguste is to Edme, the outsider. And also, Edme is a doctor, and he's been helping Hippolyte, who is very sick. And obviously, if you've got a friend who's a doctor, it's going to save you some pennies and everything. And he cares a lot about his friends, so he's going to look after him and give him good advice. He's a good friend. In September 1822, Hippolyte visits a spa to take the waters.
Do they go to somewhere lovely, like Margate or something?
Yes, I believe he did.
Excellent.
He put it down that he wanted to go to Margate. No other place like Vichy or, you
None
know...
of that.
Lords? No, not
I don't
lords.
Think,
why would you go to...
I don't necessarily think it's a spa place. I think it's more full of nuns.
It's full of nuns who throw water at you and force you to drink some weird bog water and then go there as a saint. It's not a relaxing trip.
He could have gone there and had a vision or something. You don't know.
And his vision was of Margate.
The vision was
kiss
of Margate.
Me quick hats.
Absolutely. It was the place to go to get the sea air, cure your consumption.
Not in France. You go to where is it? Le Touquet. That's a French beach area that I know
of. That is a French place. Yes, absolutely.
It is. It's lovely. I've been there. I flew there on a very small plane. I didn't fly the plane.
When you were recovering from TB.
Exactly.
So you inherited from your mother.
Well, that's how my mother died, and that was her dying wish. Put my daughter in a small plane and fly her to Le Touquet so she will never succumb to this illness. This has gone to a weird place.
It has gone to a weird place.
So Hippolyte did all of that. Yeah, he went to Le Touquet in a plane. But he goes to take the waters in this spa, wherever it is. Edme goes to visit him regularly to keep him company, to make sure he's okay, make sure he's recovering. On Hippolyte's return to Paris, he's doing okay, but it's only a few days after he arrives back in Paris that his condition... worsens quite a bit. He's now vomiting, his face is swollen, his eyes are completely red. Now, they don't call a doctor because Edme is there to help him and is to take care of him. He says that no one should come and see Hippolyte, mainly because the younger sister is knocking on the door saying she wants to see her brother. She insists on seeing her brother because he's ill. Edme is kind
fair.
Of yes, and he's gently saying to her, you are going to agitate him if you see him. He's going to get agitated if he sees anyone. He really needs to keep calm. If you want to, you can put on this big bonnet so he doesn't know it's you and look in the mirror that's kind of angled towards the bed.
Right.
Well, she does okay. this, but then she doesn't really get a good look at him.
So Ippoli, in his sort of ill delirium, just sees his figure in a big black hat in the corner of the room. There 1 minute and gone the next, sort of thing. So his sister has now become the figure of death in the corner. I'm sure he's now very
so relaxed. He's absolutely fine.
Yeah, not at all anxious or concerned at this point.
To make matters worse, is once she hears about the big hat, he's saying, well, look, he can't see you. The sister comes back, having borrowed a bunch of servants' clothes, and dresses up in those and goes, look, he'll never know it's me. I'm a servant. La 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 la. I think she says that exactly.
Exactly that, as she goes throughout the room. La 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 la. No. As all servants do.
Yes, they do. They're cleaning. Whistle while you work. La 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 la. So she does that. Edmund is like, no, you can't come in. This is mental. By all accounts as well, the sister, because she can't go in and see her brother, who is very, very ill, takes a room next door. She goes to the room next to her brother's, like where the wall is, and she's crawling around on all fours trying to hear her brother's voice and pressing up against the wall. So I'm starting to side with Edmé a bit here,
yes,
of why
actually,
she was not let
I'm
in.
I'm thinking probably wise that she wasn't let in.
Yes.
That sounds weird.
You know, regardless of her actions at all, the brother is in agony and he's very, very unwell. His condition worsens and worsens. It becomes so distressing to the point where Edmé goes, you have to get another doctor in. I can't watch my friend in this condition anymore. Please get someone else in to help him. Another doctor comes, but it's no good. Ippolit is dead the next morning after this doctor arrives. A post-mortem is carried out by the doctor, Dr. Segalas, and by Edmé, who's a doctor. Mm-hmm. He can do it. And together they conclude that it is death by pleurisy, which is an inflammation of the lungs.
Thing, yeah.
Yes. It's lungs. It's lungs.
It's lungs. It's mainly lungs.
It's lungs. He died of lungs. His lungs are... He's got 9 lungs in here and they're all bad. So Ippolit dies, leaving his 260,000 francs that he inherited from his parents. Now, what's the problem here? Well, there's no cause for suspicion, because if Ippolit dies of natural causes, who would have a reason to kill him?
Well, did he have it? Was his new will in place of going to money to the sister rather than the older brother?
Well, that would be very intriguing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
If a will,
listen to what you're saying.
I'm glad.
I've taken notes.
You haven't. I can see
I
you.
But I remembered words.
Yes, the will I told you about, where he changed it in favour of his sister, only giving Danny annuities to his brother. Well, that's missing.
Ooh.
Where is this will that he told Edmé of and he told other people about? There were rumours abound. No, this man who was very careful about his bookkeeping, his receipts, apparently the day before he became very ill, he was writing out receipts and making payments and keeping them meticulously, yet he has no will. Which is crazy for a man who is ill. Just a few days later, August, the older brother, is writing to an associate saying he desperately needs 100,000 francs.
Oh.
Would you like me to do this in a French accent?
I would now. I'm waiting. I say you said when the quotes came, it'll be in French. So
but it's...
You've told people now. You've made these promises.
How dramatic a French accent do you want?
Oh, very. I mean, this sounds like a very dramatic moment. His brother's just died. He's begging his friend for 100,000 francs. I mean, it's his full heart-wrenching drama I want going on here to make me bleed.
I'll start off small and I'll build to the end, shall I? Okay. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for what I'm about to do. It is with great grief I have to tell you that I have just lost my brother. I write at the same time to say that I must have 100,000 francs today, if possible. I have the greatest need of it. Destroy my letter and reply at once. I think in the middle of that, I went a tiny bit German.
There was something strange going on in there.
I was trying to go like, no, dampen it. Make it a little conversational. So there we go. The drama. Yes, he's written.
That was quite dramatic. I applaud you.
To translate away from my magnificent French, because that was French. Is that he's written to someone saying he needs 100,000 francs, destroy the letter. Why does he need money so fast? Why? If Ippolit died intestate, if there is no will, then Auguste would surely receive the largest portion of his money. He stands to benefit. And the sister would only get a small chunk. But that will that would see the sister get most of the money. What if it hasn't been destroyed? What if it's in the position of someone else?
In the position of someone else.
Possession of someone
else. It's masquerading as someone else. He's got the Will's got a hat on.
It's in the mirror. What if it's in the possession of someone else? That moment of drama was absolutely shot to shit there. Yeah, okay. What if the Will is still around? There we are.
There we go.
Now, August learns from a contact that a copy of the Will has been found and is being held by his father's former clerk, a man named Labrette.
Who is this man who has contacts?
He has a contacts, but I don't know.
He has contacts. Is he now some sort of secret spy?
I put the word contact in there to make it seem mysterious.
Friend, associate.
What's colleague, wrong with contact? What's wrong man with contact?
On the street. Well, it sounds like, oh, I've got, oh, it sounds weird. I've got contacts.
I've got contacts everywhere. Well, excuse me that he was tipped off in this matter of intrigue that I used the word. Right, he learned from Fred. Fred down there, the Fred, grocer. Good. His father's former clerk has a copy of the will that will favour the sister. And the sister is going to pay the clerk 80,000 francs to preserve it and ensure that it is valid. But August is told by his goddamn contact that if he can outbid his sister's offer, say up to 100,000 francs, then the clerk will destroy the will and declare that Hippolyte was intestate and August will receive the lion's share.
This is very dodgy dealings going on here. I will destroy, you pay me, I'll destroy this will.
Well, people are out to make a fast buck. All he has,
those contacts have contacts. It's very
those contacts. Those contacts need paying. Everyone needs paying. All he has to do is raise this 100,000 francs and give it to the clerk. He is told by his good friend Edme Castaing. And Edme adds that he is more than happy to act as a go-between and to deliver this 100,000 francs to this clerk. Ta-ta-ta!
He's turned into a slightly slippery, sneaky man.
Slippery, sneaky, like a snake of the grass, you might even call him.
Yeah, indeed.
Yes.
He was all best mates looking after him. Now he's dead.
The close, close friend of Hippolyte, who knew that they would both be coming into an inheritance, and who knew that his friend, who he tended through his sickness, was going to make a will and had mentioned about giving more of his money to his sister. The man that he had gone to visit while he was in the spa, while he was in Paris, constantly talking to him. Edme, who also visited a Paris chemist a few weeks before Hippolyte had gone to the spa and subsequently fallen ill, and had bought 10 grains of morphine acetate.
Oh, so now he's killed him.
Well, he's bought morphine. He's a doctor, don't you know? He returned to buy another 10 grains. Later on.
Seems quite a lot.
Well, given that the medical dose of morphine acetate at the time was 1/8 of a grain, and 3 was enough to kill you.
And he's just bought 20.
He's just bought 20. Edme had studied vegetable toxins, which morphine acetate is one of. And he had attended lectures by Professor Orfila.
Oh, we've met him before.
The famous toxicologist who would be involved, yes, in the Marsh test and the...
Yes, in the Marie Lagrange case.
Oh, yeah. Every time you say Marie Lagrange, I think Lagrange Eleganza. Lagrange, les singes, les célébranches. He had been attending his lectures, learning that vegetable poisons like morphine acetate are very, very hard to trace in the human body. They have a very bitter taste. That's the one thing about them. But they've been used by the medical profession in only a few years previously, but were hailed as a wondrous sedative, an absolutely wonderful piece of medicine. I don't know why it's a piece of medicine. It's a bit of medicine for the profession. And Edme could have treated Hippolyte with large doses of morphine acetate very easily and watched him slowly die in agony without ever coming under suspicion.
He doesn't seem to be getting anything out of this, though. Unless is he now charging for his go-between services?
This is very true. You know, what does he have to gain? Because Edme is not a member of this family. He cannot benefit from the inheritance at all. But August has raised the 100,000 francs that is needed to pay off this clerk. And he sold off some of his property and his possessions just to ensure that he gets more money out of his brother's lot. I mean, he's starting to run out of money, so he needs it quite badly. And sure enough, he hands the money over to Edme.
Very trusting.
Of course, Edme doesn't hand it over. Of course not. Surprise. He keeps it. He knew that either because of his close friendship with Hippolyte, that the will had never been finalised and either never existed, or he could have destroyed it.
Oh, cunning. Okay.
If he's in the house, he doesn't let anyone into the room. He doesn't let anyone see his brother. He can just be rifling through his stuff, getting hold of this will, destroying it. So he can spin a line to the brother.
Yeah.
And say, this will exists. Because people have sort of heard rumours about it, and it's perfect, and the notary would have heard about it as well. But he's destroyed it. He knows that it doesn't exist. So he can pretend that he's paid off someone.
Okay, that's quite cunning. that's quite cunning. The inheritance was 260.
260.
He's just got 100 of it.
He's just got 100 of it.
That's pretty, yeah, good for you.
Well, what do you do with...
Well, unless he's killed his friend for it, that's less fun.
Well, he very much maybe has done that, yes. But what do you do when you've got 100,000 francs? You pay off your debts. Yep. You send a little money home to mama. Send some money to me. Give about 4 grand to your mistress.
Well, absolutely. Yes. Standard.
Exactly. Standard.
And he's, what, got now at least 15 children by now, by all these widows.
He has to give them a shilling each. They're not even in England, but he still does that because, you know, the exchange rate is really good. He's had his money. He's cleared his debts. He's given some money to mama. He's got his mistress happy. All done and dusted. There is a story of the three brothers. Or is it, Nick?
Well, because we haven't actually got to the poisoning discovery bit.
Well, the thing is, if that had really happened, then I wouldn't be telling the story. If that was all that was happened, because we wouldn't know. Why kill one brother, though, Nick? When you can kill two! The story continues because Auguste is obviously incredibly grateful to Edme for helping him out of this tricky business. Tricky, tricky business. Now, whatever the truth is of the matter, all Auguste knows is that he's broken the law. He's engaged in some shady dealings to make sure that he gets, you know, the benefit of his late brother's will. So he's indebted to Edme. And so he agrees, decides whatever the setup is, to leave Edme a substantial inheritance in his own will. Edme has him over a barrel. Whether he's being friendly, whether August works this out in his own head, or Edme is making sort of veiled threats, he's going, look, I just helped you out massively to break the law and to screw over your sister. I know things that you don't want anyone else to know. So August, while he might not want to pay out the money immediately, he'll go, well, I will take care of you later on in life. Whatever it is, Edme seems happy with it. The friendship does not flourish as a result of this.
I can imagine not, no. I mean, Edme's got just as much to lose in this. If August does say, fine, and calls his bluff, and says, go to the authorities or whatever, then Edme's just got exactly just as much to lose, if not more.
Well, where's the evidence of what Hippolyte died of? The post-mortem was carried out by another doctor, as well as him.
Yeah.
There's no evidence.
No. So there's no, okay, so forget the potential murdering bit.
Forget the murdering.
But anyway, he's the one who's gone, I will make sure this will doesn't see the light of day, and if you give me this cash.
Mm.
Now, that is rather illegal as well.
Yeah.
So he's got just as much to lose on that side of things than August does.
It would be his word against the other brothers. I suppose Edme probably has the benefit of being a respectable doctor, a professional, you know, August is a feckless layabout who is just living off his family's inheritance and is known to be greedy and is known to spend his money recklessly. So Edme is maybe playing on the fact that, you know what, I can probably twist a lie a lot better than you can, and whatever he's done to the brother, no one's questioned him about it. Even August hasn't. You know, he hasn't worked it out, so if he had, then he would be up at the authorities. But yeah, the relationship does not flourish because August like just doesn't want to hang around with Edme anymore. I think there's every indication that Edme is still trying to be mates with him. He's probably like a creepy friend. Like, maybe he's just being really weird. August is far more interested in spending more time with his sexy new mistress. He has a new mistress. Quite. And he's lavishing her with gifts and money and parties. Edme's seeing this from the sidelines. Not only is he not happy about being sidelined, literally, he's also watching his potential inheritance being splashed all over a new bit of skirt. Won't do.
Quite.
Money's going down the drain on this tart. So Edme decides that it's time for him and August to, you know, mend their friendship and take a little trip together. Maybe to go fishing or to a farm upstate or down to the cellar Or to the killing factory. No.
Nothing bad's ever happened in a cellar.
Nothing bad's ever happened there. So the two of them go to a little town outside of Paris, about 6 miles away, with their staff as well, with their servants. And should point out in the writings at the time, it's really very nonchalantly described about how many black servants they have. And it's not okay.
Yes, I can imagine that would not be well written.
The one good thing is that they're not derogatory about the servants. They just keep saying about, and they use unflattering language. The good thing is that the servants are far smarter than anyone else in this story, and they become instrumental in giving evidence of going, it's very clearly this is what's happening. But yes, off they go to this little town, and the two of them spend the day sightseeing and taking dinner and strolling around the streets with onions around their neck and on tandem bicycles.
Are they like on a tandem bicycles with baguettes and going through the
They're
the
fighting each other with baguettes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Pressing grapes barefoot in a barrel.
So they're waltzing under a lamppost. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. In the evening, they're at their hotel and they're in their rooms of the hotel. Edmo orders some drinks to be ordered to the room. He's going to mix up a little cocktail for them. He orders some warmed wine.
Nice.
And he mixes this wine with a little sugar and a healthy dash of lemon.
Nice.
Lemony, winey cocktails.
Lemony, winey cocktail. I'm thinking probably a red wine.
Well, if it's warmed, then yes. I'm thinking probably like a mulled wine. It could be white wine. I've never tried hot white wine. I've tried hot white mulled wine once because I don't know what was happening that day. But to be fair, I've never tried hot white wine with lemon and sugar in it. It might be nice.
I'm not entirely convinced.
Well, that's the second cocktail for people to make this evening.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, so we want hot wine. Take your pick. We want some with red, some with white. Let us know what's best.
Hot wine.
Hot wine.
Hot nights, hot wine. And they have this cocktail and it's lovely. Auguste drinks very happily, but he complains there's a little bit too much lemon in his drink. It's very bitter tasting. It tastes quite sour. This is a point where he gives his servant the drink and says, "Taste that. Do you think it's sour?" And the guy drinks it and goes, "Yes, it's very sour. You really should not drink this." He's like, "No, it's fine. It's fine.
More sugar, it's fine."
And they drink their cocktails and they go off to bed separately, I believe.
you believe in hinting.
I don't know,
some
two guys on a romantic trip in France.
Full
I don't
of,
know.
With he's a room up full of servants. It's like
they've had some hot wine.
Hot wine and servants. It's all very exciting.
Did not know this was your particular quirk, Nick.
So much you don't know.
This is what the plans are for the weekend. I like it. So after their night of hot wine and servants, they go to bed and Auguste does not have a good night. He is very restless at first, and then he starts to develop terrible, terrible stomach pains. Interesting enough, so does Edmé. Well, he doesn't have stomach pains, but he has a very restless night. So he can't sleep. So what he does is what anyone would do. He orders a cab, drives to two different chemists in Paris at 4 a.m. to buy both tartar emetic and morphine acetate.
I mean, it's what I do when I can't sleep.
Exactly. I just go stock up on poison. It's fine. While he's there, he casually chats to the chemist about which poisons that he stocks are more likely to escape detection. As you do.
I mean, he's a subtle man. Absolutely. I mean,
yeah. In your pyjamas, in your fluffy slippers, 4 a.m, staring at a chemist who's opened his shop. Edmé then goes back to the hotel where Auguste was so ill now that his legs have swollen up. He's really in a bad way. Edmé gives him a glass of milk to help, then fucks off for a walk for no reason. The servant is noting all of this, by the way. The servant's name is Jean.
He's taking notes. He's there in the corner.
He's just standing there going, "Where are you going? What is going on? I can see you putting shit in the milk." It's just worse and worse. His friend is vomiting. Edmé demands that the vomit is thrown out as soon as the guy is sick. He's like, get rid of it, and, which is not what you do if you're a doctor. They call for another doctor. He says that you should get one from Paris. Auguste says, "Get one right now. I cannot wait for someone to come from Paris." A young chap turns up. He's the nearest local. I love the idea of it. It's like some parochial kind of. And he's, apparently he's 25. They make a point of that. Some wet behind the ears doctor turns up with his bag. And he, of course, declares that it's cholera.
The only possible thing it could be.
Blame it on cholera. So he prescribes lemonade.
Nice. Another lemony thing going on there. More lemon.
Lovely lemony drink. Cooling lemony drink. Sit on the veranda and fan yourself with a lemonade.
Perfect for cholera.
Edme, yeah, is like going, oh, that's great. That's fine. Give me the lemonade. Spoonfuls of it he's shoving into August's mouth is not getting better, to the point where August is choking. He is gasping that he cannot, and he's hoarsely saying he cannot even swallow his own spit. He then goes into convulsions and then falls into unconsciousness. The young doctor is called back to tell him his lemonade treatment did not work. So the young doctor, you know, steps up to the plate, ups his game, and prescribes leeches.
Nice. Yes. I mean, perfect, perfect.
Leeches
for
all. What? I don't know what century this child is from, that it's some weird kind of just lemonade and leeches will do you the world of good. Oh, and a spot of bloodletting, of course, as well.
Oh, I mean, of course.
Get the bad blood out. Another doctor is called because this kid is mental, apparently. He comes in. Ah, I see what the problem is. More bloodletting. More bloodletting. He's letting his blood. August has no blood left in him. It is reported.
A shriveled little prune.
He is. He has to, like, keep hitting his veins to try and get blood to even flow. And then not taking this as a sign that something is desperately wrong.
Too many leeches.
The leeches are huge by now. Staggering around the room. Whatever, all the bloodletting and leeches surprisingly do not work. And within a few hours, August is dead. Edme, during all of this, is wailing and sobbing at the top of his voice about his friend. He's not playing it down. He's not like doing the concerned doctor. No. He is running around talking about how awful it is that August is ill. He's declaring voluntarily that he is heir to August's fortune. Yeah. Over the top. So, oh, he lost his brother as well. The doctor, apparently the doctor sees sense and is sort of standing there going, you are really, really drawing into the fact that you're the heir to this dying man.
You need to be quiet now.
And the doctor goes so far as to sort of say, don't you think this is a bit not good for you? And Edme says, I'm not going to do it in a French accent. I'm just going to do it in a dramatic Fey accent. I'll do it in a dramatic accent. He replies to the doctor, you're right. My position is dreadful, horrible. In my great grief, I had never thought of it until now. But now, oh, you make me see it clearly. Do you think there will be an investigation? The doctor asks that he should be compelled to ask for a post-mortem. Very much so.
Yes, wise.
Ah, you will be doing me the greatest service. I beg you, insist upon a post-mortem. You will be acting as a second father to me in doing so.
God. Calm me down, mate. Calm me down.
That in French, yeah. Brilliant.
It would have been amazing if you'd done it in French. So.
Well, I just thought it needed a bit more of a stupid me accent to do it. French would have made it sound too elegant, I think, or sexy. Post-mortem was indeed carried out.
Good.
Edme was held in the hotel during this post-mortem. Now, the post-mortem found that there was no traces of foul play. They couldn't...
That's because he was full of leeches.
They'd sucked all the poison out. But while they couldn't find massive doses of poisoning, as we might have seen in other cases, the doctor, rightly, having seen Edme dancing around the room screaming, says that he was not convinced that Edme should be released just yet. Something's not right here. He's being really, really weird. Can you arrest him for being weird? Please do that. Edme is indeed placed under arrest and taken to Paris. Now, on his arrest, Edme decides he's going to feign insanity.
Nice.
How would you feign insanity, Nick?
Ooh, I mean, there's pencils up the nose, underpants on the head.
Underpants on the head, very classic, classic, classic.
Classic insanity.
No, you need to go a bit more than that.
Okay, God, I don't know. It's going to be something quite mad.
Oh, it God, really is quite mad. He feigns insanity by drinking his own urine.
Right. Okay.
I just love the idea of that. He's like, I'm mad. Look, I'm going to drink it.
See, it could have been the perfect secret ingredient for the drink I served
you. Oh my God. It really was wee.
I know this story all along. It really was.
Oh, that was the greatest poison of them all. I just love the idea that he's in his cell and the guards are just standing outside going, I'm going to drink it. I'm going to drink my own wee. And like, go on. fine, mate.
You go for it. Sure, he just wasn't thirsty.
No, he gives up food and he demands that he's only going to drink his own wee because he's mental. He lasts 3 days doing this before he gives up. And he goes like, oh no, I'm not crazy. This is horrible.
Yeah, this is, I don't like it anymore.
So yes, he is taken to trial in November in 1823. He's charged with the murder of Hippolyte, the destruction of a document, the will, essentially.
Quite right.
And he is also charged with the murder of Auguste Belle. Three charges to be tried simultaneously. In the reports, he's described as rather attractive in appearance in the court. and this is it's how people define attractive. I always find this really weird. If you really picture this, his face long, his features regular, his forehead high. How big is his face?
With a long, high forehead.
Yes, exactly. Just he's all moon face. his hair fair in colour, brushed back from the brows. He wore rather large side whiskers.
Nice.
So he's got a massive face with his hair slicked back and big old
big
mutton
sideburns.
Chops. Yeah, yeah, mutton
big
chops
mutton
there.
Chops.
Sexy. But people described him as looking more like a priest than a doctor, with his downcast eyes, his gentle voice, his quiet, unassuming demeanour, lent him an air of patience and humility. Edme claimed that he had received the 100,000 francs that people could see that had been come into his possession that he'd paid off people with. He said it was from an uncle. An uncle? Couldn't say yes. Which uncle. Just random uncle.
Random uncle.
And he insisted that the morphine acetate that he had bought was harmless. And he went so far as to write repeatedly to chemists trying to get them to say that it was harmless. And they all...
none of them did.
No, none of them wrote back. They... No, 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 no. Now, the trial, many reports on the trial, it is, suffice it to say, it is lengthy and sensational. They could not, though, continue with the charge of murdering Hippolyte because there was not enough evidence for this. Now, you know, maybe, well, I think it's very unlikely that he wasn't responsible for it.
Yes, but really, it doesn't sound like
but
it.
But that's it. He'd bought the morphine, but he's a doctor. No one could testify of actually seeing him give an overdose. There's no evidence in his body. It's just he happened to die in his care is pretty damn suspicious, but no evidence. But when it came to Auguste, Professor Orfila himself was asked for his opinion, and he said it would be impossible to detect poison in the corpse because of the lack of samples of vomit. Because Edme had insisted they be thrown out. He's a student of the professor. Mm-hmm. He knows his stuff. He insisted everything was thrown away. Had he had a sample, though, the professor said, he would have been certain to prove the poison's presence. Edme, you know, despite his attractive appearance and his soft, soft demeanour, when he took the stand, he absolutely crumbled. He fell into numerous traps, told lie after lie. He was drawn in by the prosecution into various kind of like dead ends of things, and the public favour in him absolutely vanished. The biggest thing that would come out of this case, what was determined was that vegetable poisons leave no trace. So poisoning can be committed with pretty much impunity. So
have at it. Go for it.
Exactly. Arsenic? No, 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 no. Veggie poisons? Fill your boots, mate. Fill your boots. Kill everybody you know. The jury ultimately found Edme not guilty of murdering Hippolyte, but guilty of destroying his will. And the majority of the jury, 7-5, found him guilty of murdering Auguste. And he was sentenced to death. In the final, final stages, and in a very, very poisonous cabinet way, 2 days before his sentence was due to be carried out, Edme tried to kill himself in prison by using a poison that a friend had smuggled into him via a pocket watch.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. I like that.
He did not go through with it.
Ah.
It didn't work, or he just decided he wouldn't go through with it. But he was guillotined on the 6th of December.
I would have gone with the poison.
1823. Guillotine's going to be quicker.
It is, but it's also slightly more terrifying.
Yes. That is the story of two brothers and their terrible friend, Edme, the doctor with the morphine.
And the leeches. Oh, no, he didn't have the leeches.
No, he didn't have the leeches.
Too many doctors with leeches.
Indeed. And that is the first reported case of a doctor using morphine to kill rather than cure. The precursor, shall we say, or the predecessor to the likes of John Adams and Harold Shipman.
Oh, very good. Da-da-da. I like that. A good story.
There's all everything was there, wasn't it?
Everything there, absolutely. Poison, leeches, hot wine and servants. All, everything you could possibly want. It's all in there.
Three friends who were torn apart by greed. Sexy, sexy greed. A sister who was just there in the background.
Sister in
many hats, dressing up as servants. But there we go. Yeah, I love that. I do like that story. Morphine acetate. Mm-hmm. It's a type of morphine. Again, my chemistry knowledge is not high at this point. But it is a type of morphine that is a vegetable poison. It tastes really bitter, but you cannot detect it. And it was used as, it was a miracle sedative at the time. Everyone was like, oh my God, it's the best thing that's ever been made. Kill people with it.
Kill people. Absolutely. That's what we do with it. This miracle cure. Let's kill everyone.
Kill everyone in the whole world. So do you think he was guilty?
I think it's probably more than likely, yes.
It is pretty cut and dry that case.
So yeah. Yeah, I think it's probably quite likely he was.
What's your favourite kind of hot wine?
Well, you know, well, I mean, there's obviously a mulled wine. I've not had a hot white wine before. That something about that sounds weird to me.
They have it. It is a thing. I think I bought it from Marks and Spencer's. Other brands are available. But yeah, there was a 1 year when shopping for mulled wine, there was a bottle of hot mulled white wine, and it was perfectly pleasant. Perfectly pleasant. Mm. I don't think I would choose to do it.
So not that pleasant.
Well. I don't remember it, but then maybe I blacked out after drinking it.
Well, that could have been it. So
the secret was I needed more lemon and sugar. Apparently,
absolutely,
it was a pancake. Yes. So, what do you think, people? Do you know the story? What do you think of Edmé and the Ballet Brothers? Do you think they did ballet on the side? And if they did, what kind of outfits did they wear? We want your thoughts. Have you ever had hot white wine? Oh,
indeed.
Yes. Is it good? Should we make some later? Right now.
Make this now. Just go. Just,
you know what? Make some hot white wine wherever you are. If I get this edited in time, it'll still be Friday night. It'll be fine. Yeah, and what do you think of the brothers? I think this one's pretty cut and dried. But,
I don't think there's much ambiguity in this one, I have to say. I think it's fairly
straightforward.
Dry, really.
But this was, I did see it as a precursor to some of the Deadly Doctor cases that we will be doing in the future. Certainly John Adams. He's a little bit more historic.
Yes,
and, you know, Shipman, people will take your votes on that. Is that a main episode one or is it a Patreon one? Normally the stuff that is kind of 90s plus, even 80s plus, really, we save for Patreon because, well, it's kind of close to home. We all remember it, I think.
Indeed.
But should Shipman be on the main episode? Because it won't be a laugh a minute. I'm not going to lie.
I'm not convinced it should.
No.
I have to say it because I don't think it's going to be particularly jolly.
Because this one was jolly. This one was funny. This one was a laugh a minute.
This one was jolly. Absolutely. I mean, it's...
There were widows. There were servants. It was great.
Marvellous. What more do you want in a story?
Indeed. Well, thank you so much for your patience this week. And we're sorry this episode was a little bit late. Sometimes stuff happens, but we really, really appreciate all the messages that everyone actually sent saying,
indeed,
don't even worry
lovely.
About it. Thank you. Because we love you so much. We do this for you. So we never like to let you down. And we're glad that we didn't this week. So enjoy the episode. And tell us what you think in the comments of this story, of the episode on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. Send us your thoughts and your messages and your pictures of you enjoying cocktails. Definitely, definitely, definitely mix up a Gold Rush.
Well, indeed. So the recipe will be out at some point, depending on when this goes out. We shall put the recipe out for the cocktail.
Well, maybe we'll do this the recipe early. If you're listening to this, this is very meta. But maybe just put out the recipe and then people can mix it up and then listen to the story. Particularly on a Saturday morning, it'd be great. And come and talk to us on social media. Come and check us out on Patreon if you haven't already. Go to our merch store if you need any Poisonous Cabinet themed gift. Valentine's Day is coming up. Give someone you love something that says, I'll poison you in your sleep.
Do we have that? Can we have that?
Oh, no. Well, you know what you should do? Actually, go over to Morticulture, to the wonderful, glorious Carla Valentine. She has Morticulture. We follow her on Instagram. She has the most amazing set of Valentine's cards that are very macabre and weird. And she's tagged us in one set and they are poison themed. Go check out her stuff. Don't come to us for Valentine's Day. Well, get a hoodie and then hand someone the card. But definitely go check out her Valentine's cards because she is so delicious, so wonderful, and her products are incredible. We're not sponsored. We just fucking love her. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisoner's Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye.